that. From his disheveled blonde hair to the way he'd rolled up his sleeves and left his shirt untucked, she could tell. He was cool. Probably popular, too. So why was he talking to her? She almost asked him, but stopped herself at the last second.
"Where are you supposed to be?"
she asked instead.
"The universe. I ditch whenever I can. Lady Belva has the worst crush on me. I mean, I can't really blame her."
He gestured to himself.
"But still, it's awkward. You know?"
She was 90% certain he was joking, but he was also very good-looking. She was sure at least half the girls in school had a crush on him.
"And now, I get to meet the mysterious new girl,"
he added.
"So I'd say ditching paid off pretty well."
She felt herself blush, and hoped he didn't notice. "I'm hardly mysterious."
"I don't know. You won't tell me why you're not in session. Don't think I haven't noticed."
She stared at her feet.
"That's because it's too embarrassing."
"I love embarrassing."
He laughed when she stayed silent.
"Will you at least tell me where you're supposed to be?"
She sighed. "Alchemy? With Lady Galvin?"
"Ugh. She's the worst. I had her as a level 3, and she hated me. Probably because I turned the lab table to silver. But she said she wanted me to impress her."
He winked.
"Still, I wouldn't mention that we're friends if I were you."
Friends? Since when did cool, cute boys want to be her friend? Not that she was complaining.
"So, what, did Lady Galvin kick you out or something?"
he asked. "Kind of."
"Now this I have to hear."
"You're going to laugh at me."
"Probably,"
he agreed. He clearly wasn't going to let it go, so she kept her eyes glued to the floor.
"I accidentally exploded the serum I was making."
Right on cue, he burst into laughter.
"Did you do any damage?"
"Only to her cape."
"Whoa, whoa, whoa. Do you have any idea how epic that is? That cape is her pride and joy. Did she send you to Dame Alina's office?"
"No. She sent me to the healing center. A little of it got on my hand."
She glared at the ugly red welt. He studied her for a second, then shook his head.
"Wow. Most girls would be crying about a wound like that. Most guys, too. Even I'd be playing it up for sympathy and stuff."
"It must look worse than it is."
"Still, don't you think you should get it treated?"
"I guess."
He laughed again.
"You just turned whiter than these walls. What's wrong?"
"Nothing." There was no way she was telling him about her doctor phobia. She'd never hear the end of it.
"Come on, then. I'm taking you to the healing center so you don't get lost again."
He hooked his arm through hers and dragged her away before she could resist. The healing center consisted of 3 rooms: a treatment area with 4 empty beds, a huge laboratory where strange alchemy experiments were brewing, and the physician's personal office, where a familiar face sat at an enormous desk covered in paperwork.
"Sophie?"
Elwyn asked.
"I figured I'd have to drag you back here to check up on you."
"I know," she said, very aware of the way Keith had cocked his head toward her.
"I have a tiny burn I need you to treat. No big deal."
"Well, let me check it out."
As he got up, a slinky gray creature hissed and scurried across the floor.
"Don't mind, Bullhorn,"
Elwyn said, as Sophie backed against the door.
"He's harmless."
Bullhorn looked like a demented ferret with beady purple eyes.
"What is he?"
"A banshee. Adorable, isn't he?"
Sure.
Bullhorn snapped at her ankles,
Keefe laughed.
What brings you here today, Keefe?
Elwyn asked.
Just helping a fellow prodigy, sir.
Elwyn grinned.
I notice you've had to miss your session to do it.
I know. Such a shame.
He sighed dramatically.
But Sophie needed help. So what could I do?
What, indeed? And I suppose you'll be wanting a pass to excuse you?
What a good idea.
You always have been one to seize an opportunity.
Elwyn handed Keefe a slip of paper.
Session won't be over for another half hour, so I'd walk slow if I were you.
Oh, I can't leave yet.
Not until I know Sophie will be okay.
Mm-hmm. So, where's the burn?
He asked Sophie. She wanted to be brave in front of Keefe, but her arm still shook when Elwyn put his funny glasses on and flashed a blue orb of light around her hand. Elwyn frowned.
This looks like an acid burn. How did you manage that?
Slight accident in my alchemy session? Keefe mimed a huge explosion, complete with sound effects.
Destroyed Galvin's cape.
Elwyn dropped her hand, cracking up.
Wish I could have seen that.
Sorry,
he added when he caught her scowl.
Have a seat, so I can treat it.
He had Sophie sit on one of the beds and grabbed a small jar from one of the shelves. She tried to stay calm as he rubbed purple salve on her burn, but Keefe saw her flinch.
Out of curiosity,
Elwyn asked,
how did you explode the serum?
I'm not sure. I measured everything twice and added it in the order I was supposed to. But when I whipped it, it exploded.
Whipped it?
Keefe interrupted. Yeah. At first I thought it said whap, but I figured I'd read it wrong, so I whipped it. Elwyn and Keefe both burst into hysterical laughter.
Whap means wash hands and present,
Keefe managed to explain between laughs. Oh. She was officially an idiot. Why didn't she ask for clarification? Elwyn cleared his throat.
It's an honest mistake. Could have happened to anyone.
It didn't. It happened to her. She knew she wasn't going to live this down anytime soon.
This is going to be epic,
Keefe said, confirming her fear.
I can't wait for tomorrow.
She sighed. At least that made one of them. 21. A highly embellished version of the Great Cape Destruction spread through the school faster than the white fires in her old city, and Sophie knew Keefe had everything to do with it. Even her mentors had heard about it. Sir Conley joked that they'd have to work their way up to bottling fire and elementalism, so she wouldn't burn down the school. Lady Anwen told her in multispecial studies that she hadn't laughed so hard in 324 years, and Sir Faxon had to cancel his metaphysics lecture because he snorted lushberry juice all over his clothes. Once again, Sophie could feel everyone watching her as she wandered the halls. Except this time, they wanted to know her. Kids invited her to sit with them during lunch. They introduced themselves during orientation, between classes. They complimented her eyes. Dex told her the next week they were getting requests for brown eye drops at Slurps and Burps. He was in the process of trying to create them. Sophie couldn't believe it. Overnight, she'd somehow become popular. Grady was relieved when she told him. The more she belonged at Foxfire, the harder it would be for Bronte to get her expelled. But she refused to take anything for granted. She still sat with Mirella during lunch. Dex joined them when his detention was over, and Gensley slipped in a few days later. but he'd reached out to her on her first day, so he was allowed. Plus, her sessions were incredibly challenging. Lady Galvin didn't fail her, but she made her work on the opposite side of the room, which turned out to be a wise decision. Fires and explosions were a regular occurrence. The problem was, Sophie didn't just have to learn. She had to unlearn a lifetime of human knowledge, where things like alkahest didn't exist. All the laws she'd learned in chemistry were wrong and tripped her up. She had the same problem with some of her other sessions. Levitating was supposed to be impossible. So was catching wind in jars and bottling rainbows. She constantly had to remind herself not to trust her instincts, because they were all wrong. And even when she tried her hardest, she still messed things up. Which was why her telepathy sessions became the highlight of her week. Every skill came effortlessly, and she was amazed at the things she could do with her mind. Tiergan taught her how to shield her brain from unwanted human thoughts, in case she was ever around humans again, and how to transmit her thoughts into someone else's mind. She even learned how to project mental images onto special paper, like a psychic photograph. For the first time in her life, she didn't mind being a telepath. It was actually pretty cool, and no one could deny her talent. Even Bronte wouldn't be able to. Too bad she had to keep it secret. It would have been fun to shut Stina up whenever she teased Sophie about needing remedial studies. Stina still hadn't manifested a special ability, so it would kill her to know Sophie was a telepath, being trained by the greatest telepathy mentor ever. But she'd have to be patient. Stina would learn the truth. Eventually. Plus, she had other problems. Biana avoided her like the plague, and Sophie had a strong suspicion she was keeping Fitz away from her. 2 months had passed since she'd moved to Havenfield, and except for a couple waves across the hall, she hadn't seen or talked to him. She missed him, more than she wanted to admit. The next week, Sophie finally saw Biana waiting for the Leapmaster without her snotty friend, Maruka, another member of the I Hate Sophie Foster Club, and decided to try reaching out. Biana spotted her and cut in line, leaping home before Sophie could reach her. The sigh Sophie let out sounded more like a growl. "What's wrong?" Dex asked, catching up with her. "Biana, I don't know what her problem is, but I'm really getting sick of it."
"She's just jealous. She's used to being the prettiest girl in school."
As soon as the words left his mouth, he turned bright red. Sophie knew her face had to be redder than his. Neither of them seemed to know what to say after that, so she waved goodbye and leaped back to Havenfield without another word. She came home to total bedlam. Grady and Edeline were struggling to subdue a very angry woolly mammoth, and the gnomes were chasing a small pack of rabbits with antlers.
"You're just in time,"
Grady called to her as he ducked under a swinging trunk. He pointed to a lump of trembling purple fur.
"Can you get the vermilion in a pen?"
Sure.
"Thanks."
Grady boosted Edeline onto the mammoth's back. The huge, hairy elephant trumpeted in protest, an earth-shaking squeal that left Sophie's ears ringing. Sophie crept toward the purple mound of fur, hoping the vermilion was as timid as it looked. A twig snapped under her foot. Psss. The creature uncurled, revealing a giant rodent face with glassy black eyes, pointy fangs, and bulging cheeks. She'd always thought hamsters were pretty cute, but this Rottweiler-sized beast was Hamsterzilla, and it looked ready to trample her like a Japanese city.
"Nice hamster, vermilion thing," she cooed, taking a step closer.
Snarl.
Hamsterzilla was not impressed.
"You have to make it chase you to the pen, Sophie,"
Edeline shouted as she tried to steer her mammoth by its furry ears. How do I do that?
Grady dashed after Edeline.
Get it mad!
But what if it catches me?
It won't, Edeline promised.
Better run really fast, just in case, Grady added.
Sophie knew this would probably end up in the top 50 stupidest things she'd done. But she picked up a huge clot of mud and nailed the vermilion in the gut.
Growl!
She took the hint and bolted for the nearest pen, only to realize Grady's plan had a fatal flaw. The vermilion blocked the only exit, and he seemed to know it. She could have sworn his beady eyes were laughing at her.
A little help here, she called, as the mutant hamster closed in.
On it!
The gnomes took over helping Edeline, and Grady raced across the yard, jumped the vermilion, and pinned it. Purple fur flew as the beast thrashed to escape. Grady grunted.
Okay, Sophie. I want you to put one hand on each of his cheeks and press as hard as you can.
After a few tries, and a lot of snarling, she managed to get her hands in position and squeeze. The vermilion's jaw unlocked, and an assortment of dead furry things spewed all over the ground.
Ew, she whined.
I know, Grady agreed. There's a pile of bags and some gloves in the shed so you can clean it up.
She stared at the mound of flesh and fur.
We can trade jobs, Grady offered.
The vermilion growled again. Sophie sighed as she trudged to the shed, slipped on the oversized gloves, and made her way back to the pile.
I am so taking a shower after this.
She threw dead squirrels and rats and things she couldn't begin to identify into the heavy burlap sack. One moved in her hand, and she squealed, jumping back.
What?
That thing isn't dead.
You'd better take it to Edeline, then. See if there's anything she can do.
Sophie stared at the quivering ball of gray fur, afraid to touch it again.
My arms are getting pretty tired here, Sophie.
Snarl,
the vermilion added. She steeled her nerves and threw the rest of the dead things into the sack. Then she picked up the live creature, trying not to shriek as he trembled in her hands. He was the size of her palm, with enormous green eyes, furry ears, and bat-like wings. His tiny chest heaved as he struggled to breathe. Sophie raced across the pastures toward the shed.
Edeline, I need your help!
Edeline rushed to her side, wiping mammoth wool off her tunic. Sophie held out the suffering creature.
Do you think you can save him?
Edeline's gentle fingers probed through the fur.
He has some deep scratches, and his leg looks broken, but we can try.
Sophie followed Edeline into one of the stone outbuildings. Beyond the shelves of carefully organized supplies was a space set up like a veterinarian's office. Edeline laid the creature flat on its back on a sterile table, spreading out his limbs and wings. She smeared a yellow salve over the wounds, then set the leg and conjured up an eyedropper and a bottle of youth. She dripped a single drop of liquid onto his furry lips. Sophie squeezed Edeline's arm as a tiny purple tongue popped out and licked the drop of water. Edeline stared where Sophie's hand touched her. Her eyes turned glassy. Sophie pulled away.
Sorry. No, it's...
She cleared her throat.
Can you keep an eye on him while I help Grady finish up?
Sure.
She waited for Edeline to leave, then placed another drop on the creature's lips.
Don't die, little guy, she whispered, watching his tongue pull the water into his mouth.
12 drops later, and his breathing was steady. He curled into a tiny ball.
That's a good boy, Sophie cooed,
stroking the fur along his back. He rewarded her with a squeaky rumbling in his chest. She smiled, remembering Marty's crackly purr.
How's the patient?
Grady asked from the doorway. He stood next to Adeline, both of them watching Sophie with small smiles.
I think he's doing better. He drank a bunch of water, and now he's sleeping.
Adeline nodded.
That's a good sign. Do you want to wash up and have some dinner?
Can I bring him with me? I don't want to leave him alone.
Grady grabbed a small cage from one of the shelves and filled it with dinosaur fluff from a nearby barrel before handing it to her.
Good job, Sophie. You saved his life.
She brought the cage inside and, after an incredibly hot, soapy shower, met Grady and Adeline downstairs for dinner. She kept the cage with her at the table to keep an eye on the creature. He'd rolled onto his back with his mouth open and his tongue hanging out. If it weren't for the chainsaw-esque snores vibrating the cage, she might have worried he was dead.
What is he?
She asked, with a mouthful of brat tail, a tuber that tasted like sausage.
An imp, Grady grumbled. They're trouble. When I was a kid, one got inside my treehouse. I've never seen such a disaster.
You want to keep him, don't you?
Adeline guessed. Sophie shrugged.
Maybe.
Adeline smiled.
You aren't seriously thinking about this, Etta. Have you been around an imp before?
Please tell me you're not afraid of a 6-inch ball of fur,
Adeline teased.
You should have seen my treehouse. Plus, they bite. Did you know that? And their bite is venomous. It won't kill you, but it stings a lot.
Sophie looked at the tiny, snoring body and tried to see the vicious monster Grady was describing. All she found was a cute little lump of fur whose life she had saved.
Grady, we tame dinosaurs and yetis. We can handle an imp,
Adeline argued. Grady laughed.
I can see I'm outnumbered here, but don't say I didn't warn you.
Sophie and Adeline shared a smile. Then Adeline helped her bring the cage to her room. Sophie chose a table by the window so the little guy would have sunlight during the day, and crouched down to check on him. He was still conked out, snoring like a wood chipper.
What do you want to name him? Adeline asked.
Sophie blushed.
I know it's silly, but I kind of like Iggy.
Iggy the imp. I like it.
She placed a hand on Sophie's shoulder, and Sophie straightened.
Sorry. Do you mind?
No. It's nice. Sophie whispered.
It was the first time Adeline had touched her. Adeline held her breath as she used her other hand to brush a strand of hair off Sophie's cheek. Sophie closed her eyes and leaned into Adeline's hand. Her heart seemed to swell inside her chest, filling an empty space she'd almost forgotten was there. Her human parents had been generous with hugs and touches, and she hadn't realized how much she'd missed those gestures. She held still, afraid to do anything to ruin the moment. Adeline swept her hand across Sophie's forehead again and let out a sigh.
You should get to bed.
Her fingers brushed down Sophie's cheek as she pulled away. Sophie blinked and nodded.
I'll get ready.
Good.
Adeline smiled, and her eyes glistened with tears.
I hope you sleep okay, she added,
with a dubious glance at the noisy cage.
Me too.
Sophie's cheek still tingled where Adeline's fingers had left tiny trails of warmth.
Adeline?
She asked, as Adeline turned to leave. Adeline's eyes met hers.
Thank you.
It took Adeline a second to answer.
You're welcome. Good night, Sophie.
Good night.
When Sophie climbed into bed a few minutes later, it finally felt like home. 22. Sharing a room with Iggy was kind of like having a congested warthog for a roommate. But Sophie didn't mind. She was warm and snuggly with the feeling of home, and even a sleepless night couldn't spoil it. Grady and Adeline promised to check on Iggy during the day, to make sure he was okay. And Sophie left for Foxfire not even caring that it was a Thursday. And she had another humiliating PE session ahead of her.
Who's ready for the ultimate splotching championship?
Sir Caton asked, as the mentor strode into the amphitheater carrying huge sacks of tiny, brightly colored balls. Everyone cheered.
What's the ultimate splotching championship? Sophie asked Dex.
Telekinesis, he grumbled. I suck at telekinesis.
She tried to look sympathetic, but secretly she was celebrating. Finally, something she knew how to do. Well, sort of, but that was better than nothing. How does this work? She asked as everyone partnered up. Naturally, she teamed with Dex.
We push the splotcher at each other with our minds, he explained. And whoever gets splattered loses. The winners play each other until there's only one left, and that person wins.
Everyone, on your marks, Sir Caton ordered,
as Lady Alexine handed Dex a bright pink splotcher.
Get set!
Dex tossed the splotcher towards Sophie.
Catch!
It very nearly splattered the floor, but at the last second she managed to catch it with her mind.
Sorry, I forgot you're worse at this stuff than me, Dex said smugly. At least I'll win one match this time.
She rolled her eyes. He shouldn't count her out yet. She took a deep breath, focusing on the power she knew was deep within her core. She could almost feel it swirling around, like a warm buzzing in her stomach.
Splotch!
Sophie pushed the warmth out through her fingers and sent it toward the splotcher. Splat! A stunned Dex stared at Sophie, with bright pink slime running down his chin. She nailed him right on his smug little grin.
Sorry, she said, not quite able to hide the smile in the corners of her mouth.
It's okay, he said through a sigh. I guess I deserved it.
Well done, Sophie,
Sir Caton interrupted, sounding more surprised than she would have liked.
Go ahead and move up to the winners. Dex can join those colorful prodigies over there.
He pointed to a group forming on their left. Dex scowled.
So what's the prize for this contest anyway? Sophie asked before Dex wandered away.
Usually a pardon from one punishment, but don't get your hopes up. Fitz always wins. Not that Wonder Boy ever does anything to need a pardon.
He mimed, gagging.
Anyway, I hope you win a few more rounds.
Thanks.
Mirella made it to the winners. So did Biana and Maruka. Even Jensi. Unfortunately, so did Stina.
Even a muskog could beat Dex, Stina sneered. Let's see how you do against a real opponent.
She tossed a bright blue splotcher at Sophie's head. Sophie caught it with her mind, floating it in the space between them. She ignored the knots in her stomach. She wasn't backing down.
I'm going to enjoy this, Stina sneered. I'll aim for your eyes. Finally turn them blue.
Sophie gritted her teeth. She didn't care how she did it, but Stina was going down.
Get set, Sir Caton called. Splotch!
Sophie threw her hands out, pulling a bigger burst of strength from her gut as she shoved the splotcher. Splat!
Ow!
Stina screamed, rubbing her slimy blue cheek.
Sorry,
Sophie said, her eyes wide. Had she pushed too hard?
No reason to apologize, Lady Alexine corrected. Well done, Sophie. I haven't seen such raw telekinetic power in a long time.
Sophie flushed. That was the first compliment Lady Alexine had ever given her.
But she hurt me, Stina argued. That disqualifies her, doesn't it? I didn't mean...
Sophie started to explain, but Lady Alexine held up her hands. You didn't do anything wrong. If you're hurt, Miss Hex, go to the healing center. Either way, Sophie won fair and square. Mirella caught her eye and pumped her arms in victory. Sophie's face felt hotter, especially when she noticed the other prodigies cheering for her. Did they think she'd actually taken Stina down?
As for you, Miss Foster, Lady Alexine added, I think it might be a good idea to put you with the level threes so your opponents can match your mental strength.
Since when did she have the mental strength to face off against older kids with a lot more training and experience? She'd been ahead around humans, of course, but here she felt so far behind, it wasn't even funny. Was she starting to catch up? It seemed like she was. She took out the level threes in duel after duel, and before she knew what was happening, there were only 9 other prodigies left.
A level 2 making it to the top 10, Keith said behind her. He flashed a crooked smile. And you said you weren't mysterious.
She stared at her feet to hide her blush.
Must be beginner's luck.
Keith snorted.
Or maybe you've got all kinds of talents we don't know about.
He couldn't know about her telepathy, could he?
Look who went pale again. Interesting, he murmured.
She opened her mouth to make some excuse, but he cut her off.
I have a feeling you'll be the one to take down the mighty Fitz.
Sophie froze. She wasn't surprised that Fitz was still in the competition, especially after Dex's earlier grumblings, but it hadn't occurred to her that she might have to battle him. Her palms slicked with sweat, but she shook the idea away. What were the odds she would be able to beat a bunch of older, much more experienced prodigies? Evidently, the odds were good. Soon enough, she was in the final 4. Her, Fitz, and 2 level 6s, named Trella and Dempsey. Everyone seemed as surprised as she was, even the mentors. Sir Caton paired Fitz against Trella, and Sophie toyed with the idea of not even trying in her match with Dempsey, so she wouldn't have to face Fitz. Then she caught the hopeful look on Stina's face, and found a new determination to win.
Splotch!
Dempsey was fast on the draw, and the splotcher was halfway to her face before she stopped it. She locked her jaw and threw out her hands, pushing with every bit of strength she could muster. Her stomach cramped, and the splotcher splattered so hard, it knocked Dempsey back a step.
That hurt!
He rubbed his cheek, smearing the orange goo. She rushed toward him. Sorry, are you okay? He flinched, not looking happy to have the girl who just bested him trying to help him. Sophie stepped back.
Winner!
Lady Alexine announced, and Sophie spun around. Fitz waved to the cheering crowd before he turned and met her eyes. Her heart fluttered.
It appears we've reached our final battle, Sir Caton announced. I think it's safe to say that this is the most unusual match we've had in Foxfire history. Are the competitors ready?
Fitz stepped toward Sophie with a smug smile.
I am.
Me too.
Her voice shook, betraying her nerves.
Go Fitz!
Bianna shouted. Her voice hit an edge that made Sophie wonder if Bianna wanted her to lose more than she wanted her brother to win. She wouldn't be surprised.
Kick his butt, Sophie, Keith cheered. It's about time someone took Fitz down. Some best friend you are, Fitz shouted,
but he said it with a smile.
Any preference on splotcher color? Sir Caton asked. Pink, 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 make Fitz look pretty in pink.
Everyone joined Keefe's chant. Sophie glanced at Fitz, trying to read his expression. He grinned.
Lady's choice.
Pink, she decided. To make Keefe happy. And it would be kind of funny to splat him with pink. Not that she expected to win. Dex said Fitz always won.
Pink it is.
Sir Caton tossed the splotcher, and Sophie and Fitz made it float in space between them.
On your marks.
Sophie's hands clenched into fists. If she was going to beat Fitz, she was going to have to give it everything she had, and then some. Adrenaline surged through her veins. The murmur of the audience faded, and she became aware of another buzzing in the back of her mind, like a backup pool of energy she'd never noticed before. It felt stronger than the other energy. Could she draw from there instead?
Get set! Splotch!
Sophie threw her hands out, pushing toward the splotcher with her mind. Her brain seemed to stretch, like someone snapping a rubber band. And her ears rang, but she didn't break her concentration. The splotches exploded as her force met Fitz's, and Sophie felt the energy rebound. The next thing she knew, she was flying backward across the room. She caught the surprised look in Fitz's eyes, as the same phenomenon happened to him. For a long second, she was weightless. Then her back collided with the wall, and the wind was knocked out of her. An almost simultaneous crash told her Fitz had met the same fate. Pain shot through her whole body, and she collapsed. The last thing she saw was Fitz crumpled on the floor. Then everything went black. 23.
Welcome back, Elwyn said, placing a cool compress across her forehead. You know, for a girl who hates doctors, you sure can't seem to stay away from the healing center.
She pulled herself into a sitting position, wincing as pain whipped through every muscle.
Easy there. You've been out nearly 10 minutes.
Elwyn flashed an orb of yellow light around her and put on his glasses. 10 minutes? What happened?
No idea. I've never heard of anyone getting seriously injured while splotching. Leave it to you,
he chuckled. Her memories flooded back, splotching, flying backward through the room, Fitz's crumpled body.
Where's Fitz? Is he okay?
He's fine.
Elwyn pointed to her left, where Fitz lay in a bed with his eyes closed.
He's unconscious.
He'll come around any minute.
Elwyn placed a cold compress across Fitz's forehead, and his vivid eyes sprang open.
Wum-wap,
he mumbled, closing his eyes. Elwyn chuckled.
Must have been some splotching match.
Will he be okay?
Of course. If he weren't, Bullhorn would be freaking out right now. Or worse, laying next to him.
He pointed to the slinky gray creature curled up in the corner.
Banshees can sense when someone's in mortal danger. Fitz hit his head a little harder than you, so he needs another minute for the medicine to set in.
This is all my fault, Sophie groaned.
She wasn't sure if that was true, but it seems like the most likely option.
What did you do during the match?
Elwyn asked.
I don't know.
Fitz stirred, and he looked more lucid when he opened his eyes.
How are you feeling?
Elwyn asked him.
I've been better, but I'll live.
Fitz winced as he sat up.
Are you okay?
He asked Sophie, rubbing the back of his head. She nodded, feeling shy. She hadn't really talked to him since the first day of school. Elwyn handed them each a blue vial.
This will ease the pain. You'll still be stiff tomorrow, but I can't help that. The glands between her tongue zinged as Sophie swallowed the sour medicine. But the ache in her back vanished.
"Do either of you remember what happened?"
Elwyn asked, as he collected the empty bottles.
"Not really," Fitz admitted. "I remember pushing toward the splotcher, but then it was like it rebounded or something."
"Rebounded?"
"Yeah, I felt my force hit hers and bounce back at me."
"That's what I felt too," Sophie agreed.
Elwyn's eyes widened. Then he shook his head.
"Nah, couldn't be."
"Couldn't be what?" Sophie asked.
With a horrible feeling he was going to tell her it really was her fault.
"That sounds like what happens when someone does a brain push, using mental energy for telekinesis instead of core energy. But a brain push is a highly specialized skill only the ancients can pull off."
Sophie's heart hammered in her ears. She had pulled energy from her mind in the match. Was that a brain push?
"Doesn't telekinesis always use mental energy?"
"It uses mental control," Elwyn explained. "Your concentration controls how you use the energy, where you send it, how much you send. But the actual energy and strength comes from your core. Don't you feel the pull in your gut when you draw on it?"
She did. "But why would a brain push send us flying across the room?"
"Mental energy doesn't mix with core energy, so they'd rebound."
That matched what she'd felt. But how could that be?
"Is it something you could do by accident?"
"No way. It's a less draining way to move things, but it takes years and years to train your mind to store energy like that. Then it takes a lifetime of practice to use that mental power. It must just be that you and Fitz were evenly matched, which is still weird, don't get me wrong. You're awfully young to have that kind of strength. But I wouldn't worry about it too much, Sophie. Fitz, on the other hand, might want to worry about being beat by a level 2.
Elwyn laughed, and Sophie's face caught fire. She was too afraid to look at Fitz to see if the teasing bothered him. Plus, she couldn't help wondering if Elwyn was wrong, if she'd done a brain push. But what she'd done had been almost effortless. If it was a brain push, wouldn't she have had to try a lot harder?
"You two are cleared to return to session," Elwyn announced, interrupting her thoughts. "But I want you sitting on the sidelines, and take it easy for the rest of the day."
"Thanks, Elwyn." Fitz stood on shaky legs, leaning on the bed for a second. Sophie jumped up, wobbling as the blood rushed to her head.
"Take it easy,"
Elwyn repeated, as they made their way to the door.
"Oh, and Sophie,"
he grinned when she met his eyes,
"I'm sure I'll see you soon."
Fitz stayed quiet as they walked back to the auditorium. Sophie bit her lip. Was he mad at her? She'd just worked up the courage to ask him when they reached the amphitheater, and a round of applause drowned out the question.
"Yes, yes, welcome back, Fitz and Sophie. Glad to see you're feeling better,"
Sir Caton said, looking a teensy bit annoyed by the interruption. He tried to call everyone back to order, but Dex, Morella, Bianna, and Keith broke rank and rushed over to them. Bianna got there first and threw her arms around Fitz, hugging him so tight he winced. It would have been a touching moment if Keith hadn't copied her and grabbed Fitz, pretending to cry. Fitz shoved them both away, blushing.
"Beat by a level 2,
Keith said, elbowing Fitz in the ribs.
"It was a tie," Sophie protested. Keith snorted.
"Please,
You totally kicked his butt.
Totally, Dex agreed. He hit the wall way harder than you did.
That was the greatest present you could have ever given me, by the way,
he whispered. Sophie shook her head. He was hopeless.
Even the mentors declared you the winner,
Keith added, wrapping an arm around her shoulders.
If you don't think you'll need your pardon, I'll be happy to take it off your hands. Keith, Dex, Mirella, Biana. Need I remind you that you are not excused from this lesson?
Sir Caton yelled.
Think about it, Keith said,
then ran to rejoin the class. Fitz sat next to Sophie on the sidelines, watching everyone practice telekinesis with the remaining splotchers. She tried not to worry, but she couldn't help glancing at him from the corner of her eye, wondering why he still hadn't said anything to her.
Why aren't you and Biana friends? He asked after a minute. It seems like you guys would get along. You have a lot in common.
She wasn't sure she wanted to have things in common with someone who acted like such a brat.
I don't think she has time for another friend. She's always busy with Maruka.
He frowned. Before she could think of anything else to say, Lady Alexine delivered her prize. A small golden square with an intricate P etched on the top. Any level 2 who holds her own against Fitz is the clear winner, she explained. Congratulations, Sophie.
Thank you.
She peeked at Fitz to see if he looked bothered. He grinned.
I couldn't agree more.
But his smile faded after Lady Alexine left.
You really don't know what happened during the match?
I don't know. I do remember pushing some energy from my mind, she whispered, afraid to look at him. But that couldn't have been a brain push. Could it?
Fitz had no idea how much she needed him to tell her that it couldn't. Instead, he said,
I'll have to ask my dad.
She tried to smile, but she couldn't help feeling like she'd somehow done something wrong. The worry in Fitz's eyes seemed to confirm her fears. So later that afternoon, she worked up the courage to ask Grady about brain pushes while she helped him give Verdi a bath.
Why?
He wanted to know. Sophie focused on lathering Verdi's feathers as she told him what had happened in P.E. Grady and Edeline knew about her telepathy and her silent mind, but she hated reminding them how different she really was. Who'd want to adopt a freak as their daughter? She tugged out 3 loose eyelashes before he finally spoke.
That does sound like a brain push.
His voice was a whisper.
When you were around humans, did someone train you how to use your abilities?
No one knew about my abilities. Not even my parents.
Why? Verdi stirred, getting annoyed with her distracted bathers. Grady waited until the soggy dinosaur had settled before he answered.
The way you use your mind, Sophie. Someone had to teach you. It's not possible that you just instinctively know these skills.
But no one taught me anything. I'd remember that.
Would you?
How could she not?
Besides, how would a human even know how to teach me to use my abilities? It's not like they can do what we can.
Grady stared in the distance.
No, you're right. Only an elf could teach you.
And the first elf I met was Fitz, she added, reminding him as much as herself.
She didn't like the worry lines that creased his forehead. She couldn't have met an elf without knowing it, could she? No. She'd never met anyone else with a silent mind. Except for that jogger that day. But she'd barely talked to him for 5 minutes. He couldn't have done something to her. Could he? Wouldn't she have felt something? And why would he do that? Plus, Fitz said they'd been looking for her for 12 years. Even the council didn't know where she was. There was no way she could have met any other elves. But if humans didn't teach her, and elves didn't teach her, who did? She searched her memories for the rest of the night, but when she went to bed, she was no closer to the solution. So many things about her past raised more questions than they did answers, and it was enough to drive her crazy. She had to let this go. She had enough to worry about with her adoption, and Bronte, and gaining the council's permission to stay at Foxfire. Once she had her future settled, she could search her past. Until then, she'd try to put it out of her mind. 24.
Good morning, prodigies, Dame Alina cooed during orientation the next morning. Everyone ready for another exciting day?
Hey, check it out, Dex whispered to Sophie.
He pointed to the meter on his plain blue Nexus.
I finally passed the halfway point.
Really? She tried to be excited for him, but she hadn't even reached the 1/3 point.
Yup, not much further till I can have my own Pathfinder. Maybe I'll even get my Nexus off younger than Fitz. Man, that'd be awesome. I'd love to see Wonder Boy's face if a Disney broke his precious record.
She was about to defend Fitz when Dame Alina caught her attention.
We are now 4 weeks away from midterms. For those of you worried you won't be able to score the required 75% to pass, I recommend seeing Lady Nyssa in the tutoring center.
Maybe you should sign up for alchemy tutoring, Morella whispered. Not sure you'll pass without it.
Morella's tone was teasing, but her words hit a nerve. Sophie was barely scraping by in alchemy, and that was with Lady Galvin shouting instructions across the room. She couldn't imagine how hard it would be on her own. And she had Bronte to consider. He was probably waiting for her to fail her midterms. Everything in her shrank at the idea of needing a tutor. She wasn't used to struggling with her grades. It felt so humiliating. Not as humiliating as getting expelled.
That's it for today. Everyone, work hard! Dame Alina finished, tossing her hair before her projection disappeared.
Ugh, what is that? Sophie gagged and glared at the silver strip on her locker. Dex looked a little green.
I think it's reek rod. Elwyn must have picked the flavor today.
Remind me to yell at him the next time I see him.
Planning another visit to the healing center? Morella asked. Going to make it a daily habit?
Very funny. Morella gave her locker the tiniest lick and shrugged.
He's done worse.
Yeah, well, I'm taking all my books with me now, Sophie said.
Ooh, smart thinking,
Dex agreed, reaching for the rest of his books. He grabbed a small silver box and tore it open.
Here, take a prattle to get rid of the taste.
For once, Dex had good taste in candy. It was sweet and chewy, like caramel mixed with peanut butter and filled with cream.
Which pin did you get?
Morella asked as he pulled out a small velvet pouch, like a Cracker Jack prize. Dex removed a tiny silver horse with a glittering black mane. Morella gasped.
A Prattle's unicorn? Please tell me you want to trade.
Maybe.
His eyes darted to Sophie.
Unless you want it.
I don't have any to trade. Morella's eyes stretched as wide as they would go.
You don't have any Prattle's pins?
Sophie stared at her feet, hating how out of touch she still was.
I think Sophie should have it.
Dex placed the pin in her hand before she could argue. Morella snorted.
Of course you do.
What? She needs to start her collection.
Whatever you say.
Dex blushed, and Sophie pretended not to notice. She examined the little horse, amazed by the detail. The back had a tiny digital screen that read, Number 122 of 185.
What's the number mean?
There's one pin for every creature alive on the planet, that we know of. Right now, there are only 185 unicorns, so that pin is super rare.
Obvious bitterness leaked into Morella's voice.
Hey, Sophie?
A vaguely familiar voice asked behind her.
Can I talk to you?
Sophie spun around and froze when she saw Bianna.
Sure,
she said, as her brain struggled to compute this unexpected development. Bianna glanced at Dex and Morella.
Can we go somewhere more private?
Sophie hesitated half a second, then shrugged to her friends, and followed Bianna toward a deserted corner of the atrium.
What's up? I was wondering if you wanted to come over after school today.
Sophie waited for the punchline, but Bianna seemed serious.
Why?
Bianna looked at her hands, twisting her fingers together.
I don't know. I thought it might be nice if we could try to be friends.
The last words came out barely louder than a whisper.
Friends?
The words sounded like a foreign language coming from Bianna. Her eyes narrowed.
Did Fitz put you up to this?
No. Why would Fitz care if...
She took a deep breath.
He didn't put me up to this.
But I thought you didn't like me.
I never said that.
You didn't have to. It was pretty obvious.
Well, I'm sorry you felt that way. I guess I'm not good at meeting new people.
Talk about the understatement of the century. Sophie had half a mind to tell her that she didn't need her too little too late olive branch. But she was Fitz's sister. It would be easier if they could get along.
Fine.
Really?
Sure. I guess it's worth a try.
They both stood there, not quite meeting each other's eyes.
So, what time should I come over?
Sophie eventually asked.
Why don't you go home and change and come over after that? You know how to get there, right?
Yeah, I have been there before.
A bit of the old glare flared in Bianna's face, but it was quickly replaced with an uncomfortable smile.
Well, good. I guess I'll see you then.
Sophie watched Bianna walk away, replaying the conversation in her mind, trying to make sense of it.
Are you going to tell us what that was all about?
Dex asked, already at her side. He and Morella must have made a beeline the second Bianna's back was turned.
She invited me to come over after school today.
What?
They asked simultaneously.
She said she wanted to be friends.
Why?
They both asked. Sophie shrugged.
She didn't say.
Please tell me you told her to go sniff a Ghoulon,
Dex begged. Sophie looked down, unable to meet his eyes.
Oh, come on.
I didn't know what else to say. You could have told her she's a stuck-up snob and you don't want to be her friend,
Morella offered.
Look, I know you guys aren't going to like this, but my life would be a lot easier if Bianna and I got along. If it doesn't work out, then I wasted one afternoon of my life. So what?
How do you know this isn't a trap?
Morella asked.
Invite you over, then humiliate you. You could be walking into an ambush.
That's not what this is.
What? You think she isn't capable?
Dex sneered.
No, but she would never do it at her house. Not with Fitz there.
Right, I forgot. You and Wonder Boy are friends.
Sophie blew out a breath.
Aren't you guys the teeniest bit curious what she's up to?
She had them there.
I want details later,
Morella agreed.
And you'd better not leave anything out, Dex added. 25.